and welcome to the Esports Biz Show. I'm your host, Justin Jacobson. This week we'll be discussing esports academics. Just as a disclaimer, nothing here is intended as legal advice, so all the information is for educational purposes only. This week's guest is Dr. Seth Jenny. Seth is an assistant professor within the Department of Exercise and Rehabilitative Sciences at Slippery Rock University in Pennsylvania. Dr. Jenny is a performance advisor to Kovac 2.0, the Meta FPS AIM trainer, is a founding member of the Esports Research Network, is an editorial board member of the International Journal of Esports, serves as a faculty advisor to the esports team at Slippery Rock U. He's conducted research studies relating to video gaming and esports since 2011. Recently, he authored a textbook, Technology for Physical Educators, Health Educators, and Coaches. Dr. Jenny has provided more than 100 professional presentations, published nearly 50 peer-reviewed academic journal articles within his prime areas of research, including esports, motion-based video gaming, instructional technology, and distance running. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. So, you know, we're going to briefly introduce the topic a little. We're looking at esports academics. Previously, we've kind of explored youth and high school esports and college esports and how it's grown. And in addition to these areas, there's also a growing academic esports world, including the Journal of Esports, the International Journal of Esports, and the Esports Research Network. And, you know, these outlets kind of contribute unique publications you might not necessarily find in Esports Observer, Esports Insider, some of these more traditional media outlets that we've looked at. So now we know a bit more about what's going on there. Tell us about your past esports and gaming experience. How did you kind of get first involved?
Yeah, so I have been just a recreational video gamer. I've never been a highly competitive esports player. But I, as you said in the introduction, I started doing video gaming research, and specifically exergaming, motion-based video gaming research in 2011. And I started in sort of the physical education field, actually, looking at to what extent you could utilize motion-based video games to enhance a physical education curriculum.
We
were using the Xbox 360 at that time with Kinect. And we were looking at specifically Kinect bowling, and to what extent, how close were the motor movements required in that game to real bowling. And we looked at so I started out in that area, moved into then a little bit of the more what you might call the traditional sedentary video games, but sports simulation games. I'd always been curious, and I'd read these media articles about these international NFL players, mostly kickers, and they would come to the U.S. and they were phenomenal at place kicking and punting, but they didn't really know the rules of American football. And their coaches, the NFL coaches, would just say, "Go play Madden." And so I was like, "Well, that's really interesting that the highest level of American football is telling pros to, if you want to learn about football, go play the video game version of it." And so I did an experimental study looking at international college students, ones who didn't have familiarity with American football. And I had an experimental group that played 8 hours of Madden, another group that didn't do any Madden gaming, and pre-post tested on their American football knowledge. And sure enough, the experimental group improved their post-test score by about 10% more than the group that didn't do any gaming. But what was really interesting is that afterward, I did focus group with that group who did the gaming, and they really felt a greater connection to American culture because they understood the basic rules of American football, and they could go to the bar and understand when people are cheering, what's going on. And so I did a few different studies relating to that, and then I moved into esports in around 2016, 2017, when they started, when I say they, the collegiate esports really started picking up, and Robert Morris and some of these institutions started offering collegiate scholarships that really grabbed my attention, and I started shifting my focus of research more on esports than motion-based gaming and sedentary gaming, more the competitive side of things. So yeah, that's sort of how I got into it. And now I'm moving into curriculum development and teaching courses in esports.
Amazing. So tell us a little about, you know, the courses that Slippery Rock offers, and, you know, how did it start, and what are some kind of courses that you guys are offering to students now?
Sure. So in 2018, I got approached by a guy that I did a few esports research projects with named Joey Gariziak from Shenandoah University. And he said, hey, we're thinking about starting an esports major at Shenandoah, which is in Winchester, Virginia. And he said, you know, he's a sport management professor, and I'm, you know, I come from it from the exercise science side of things. He's like, what about trying to do some type of interdisciplinary major? And so I helped design the Shenandoah University esports major there. And my current administration at Slippery Rock sort of took notice of that. And so about a year now, I've been working on curriculum development at Slippery Rock. And then this coming fall, 2021, I'll be starting to teach some esports specific courses at Slippery Rock. So the first one is called, it's a liberal studies class. And so what that is one of these general education requirements that incoming freshmen have to take. And the way that Slippery Rock does it is it's called university seminar, where the professors teach sort of how do you understand things, and how do you research things, and how do you challenge claims in the media and not just accept things for fact. And so how do you search for truth through the lens of sort of your research focus? So I'm teaching a class called Game On. This is esports. And I'm sort of teaching some basic research skills, but through the lens of esports. A second class I'm teaching, which will eventually hopefully be part of an undergraduate minor in esports at Slippery Rock, is called Introduction to Esports. Really covers the gamut of how esports are governed, what are some of the leagues, what is esports versus video gaming, and provides a basic introduction to some of the terminology, to the game titles, to the genres, and things like that. And then the last class that we have approved to start teaching is called Current Issues in Esports, Health, and Society. And again, that one is also is part of an interdisciplinary undergrad esports minor that will help be also part of the liberal studies curriculum at Slippery Rock.
Interesting. You know, it's amazing to see how you're able to kind of develop these curriculums and kind of take the existing body of knowledge that, you know, other areas are already using and, you know, kind of adapt it towards this field.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that really is lagging behind, as you mentioned, is the research. So we have some related fields where you have some research on video gaming, and a lot of it, you know, is in the game design area. But now we're really starting to pick up the amount of academic, peer-reviewed empirical research specific with samples of esports competitive video game players. And so that's something that is a passion of mine, and I'm continuing to do research on that, particularly with the health implications of sedentary gaming. And a study that we just submitted for publication that I did with the New York Institute of Technology, Joanne Donahue and some colleagues there, we were looking at to what extent a short walk break in the middle of a 2-hour gaming session would have on executive functioning. So like your cognitive decision making, as well as gaming performance of FPS players. And so we had three conditions for each of the participants of the study: 2 hours continuous gaming on one session. The second session was an hour of gaming, a 6-minute brisk walk, and then another hour of gaming. And then the last condition was an hour of gaming, a 6-minute complete rest, just laying down, and then another hour of gaming. And so, yeah, that's one of the types of studies that we're starting to look at, where there's so much research out there that talks about how exercise improves cognition. Well, what we want to know specifically in the esports field is, does it improve gaming performance and, you know, decision making, cognitive functioning relating that will help gaming performance?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that kind of brings us to the next question. So we mentioned the Esports Research Network. So kind of tell us a little bit about, you know, what that is and some of the work that they've done now and kind of how they fit into this whole scene.
Yeah. So this organization is actually based out of Germany, but it's a conglomerate of esports scholars from around the world. And I've connected and have done research with people that I've met through this network. I encourage you to check out their website. It's esportsresearch.net. And their main purpose is to connect researchers to engage with the industry, with society, and then connect with other researchers. One of the unique things about their website, if you go on there, they have a tab called Esports Literature. And it's a massive database of esports research studies that have been done from peer-reviewed journals. And so you can put in certain search terms. Maybe you want to find some studies on esports psychology or tilt, or maybe you want to find some research about esports in the Olympics, or, you know, anything relating to esports. And you'll find that in that literature database. They also have a podcast too. So yeah, I encourage you to check that out, but it's something that is helping push forward the legitimacy of esports research. And hopefully that more people will see esports as something that is worth investigating and not just video gaming that, you know, nobody cares about type of thing, that it's something serious and it's something there's a lot of money surrounding, hence the title of your podcast here.
Yes. No, you know, we've definitely identified that there's a unique area of, you know, huge growth. And as you mentioned, being able to bring the academic angle into it and kind of give it this true mainstream acceptance where it's like, yeah, the academics of the world are doing studies. We actually care about how lighting and energy and light and everything that has to go into performance, how that affects and how we look at it from a more academic lens is what gives credibility to all of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And from my perspective too, you know, I certainly look at things through the health angle where, you know, I'm hoping that more esports organizations will take the health of their players more seriously and have a long-term focus for players and not just a short-term, we're on a six-month contract or a one-year contract and this is all we care about, because there's way too many players that are getting injured that I believe are preventable injuries, and they're not showing as much focus on the holistic care of the person, not just, you know, the video game player specifically. And so I think research will help shed light on the impacts of exercise and working with sports psychologists and the like.
Absolutely. So, you know, I definitely know we've had previous topics of, you know, health and esports and how we believe that sooner than later, most orgs are going to have some kind of medical and training staff, nutritionists, which a lot of them already do, because these studies are going to substantiate the fact that more sleep and proper circulation and stretching and, you know, light weights or whatever it might be is going to increase your performance. And we don't have to be theoretical about it. We have places like the Esports Research Network and, you know, the other outlet that I know is quickly emerging, the International Journal of Esports. So tell us a little about that. I know you're involved in it.
Yeah, so the International Journal of Esports is an open access, meaning that you do not have to pay to view the articles after they're published. You know, if anybody hates when you want to you read an abstract and it sounds like a really interesting journal article, and then all of a sudden it says, "All right, you need to pay $39 or try to contact your library to gain the full text." So this is open access, meaning the whole article is available, and it is open to pretty much anything that relates to esports, this journal. Again, it's a global editorial board. So a lot of different perspectives there. We just a few months ago finished up a undergraduate college student essay competition. They had a couple different options to write an essay about. And so we're definitely trying to support young scholars that are looking to try to get recognized. Their website is ijesports.org. So definitely check that out. It's a great avenue for more people to find esports research, but we try not to write and have these articles with such technical, you know, academic types of terms that you can't understand what you're reading. And so we want to try to have it in a way that it's not just for academics, it's for industry personnel, it's for esports players, it's for anybody who has an interest in esports, that it's welcoming and it's accessible to all of those populations.
Amazing. I think that's important. And, you know, as you mentioned, having access to without having to pay for it and having something that's digestible for students and professionals and, you know, people that maybe aren't as sophisticated as a PhD or, you know, graduate level student might be. And
oh, there's plenty of PhDs that aren't sophisticated.
Okay. Well, you know, we're trying to be nice about it, you know. But yeah, so, you know, I know we're kind of talking about some of the curriculum development that you've been working on in this space. So are there any suggestions for any potential courses that potential students or universities might find valuable that's really kind of currently lacking that you see the need for as we go forward?
Yeah, so I actually have a paper that is in review right now where we took a worldwide inventory of esports academic degrees in higher education. And I did this research with Joey from Shenandoah, as well as Nico Bessomes from France. And we came across 95 higher ed programs that are focused on esports. So that covers the gamut of bachelor's degrees, master's degrees, technical, like diplomas, certificates and undergraduate minors. And so these primarily focus, about 80% of them across all of those programs that we found, 80% of them were focused on esports business. So like esports marketing, event management, entrepreneurship, administration.
15%. The money.
Yes, exactly. And that's obviously what you would expect. There was only about 3% just sort of claim themselves to be a general esports degree program. The majority of them had a specific focus or niche. About 16% were focused on broadcasting, communication, media, public relations. And then when you talk up to people about esports degrees, most of the people think that you're talking about like a training program of how to be an elite esports professional. And really only about 12% of the programs that we came across were focused on how do you get better at gaming, like the performance, exercise, sports science piece to it. And so that, you know, to answer your question, that is one of those areas that could probably use some more academic programming in, as well as the health aspects of it. But really, when you think about it, the value of these programs, the purpose of them is to teach these students transferable skills so that they can use it and have an inside knowledge about esports within the industry. But they also should, the better programs should be teaching transferable skills, you know, communication, business, marketing, those types of skills that can be used in any career field. And so they'd be doing a disservice to the student if you're pigeonholing the student to only try to find an esports job. And so, those are some of the areas, and I'm really excited for that paper to come out because there are some issues with some of these programs. So, for example, you came across one certificate. It's a graduate certificate in esports from this one institution. Well, that institution also offers a graduate certificate in sport management. Well, what they did is they took several courses from their sport management certificate program. They added one class called Introduction to Esports, and boom, there's their esports certificate program. And so in the paper, we call that esportifying a curriculum, where, you know, you take one or two esports classes and you throw it with a bunch of existing courses already on the books, and then you call it an esports degree. And so there's some of those things that need to be worked out, and there's no current accreditation for esports programming just yet, just the general accreditation for universities. So those are some of the things that need to be worked through. And from my own experience, if you're looking to develop the curriculum, you really need to be prepared for territory battles, because esports is so interdisciplinary. You know, where does the program get housed? Do you put it in the College of Business? Do you put it in the information, you know, technology, computer science? Does it go? I mean, my courses are housed in the exercise science program, because that's where the faculty member with the expertise has it. And some of my classes have a little bit of a health focus relating to esports. And so anytime I've spoken to anybody who's proposed new esports curriculum in higher ed, it's always a massive battle, because people want to get their hands in the pot. And not all of those people that want a hand in the pot have a background in a knowledge level of esports.
Interesting. I think that's, you know, a great point that you're bringing up. And a lot of people just want to kind of catch the wave of it. But if you don't do it properly, you know, you're really just saying, okay, instead of playing basketball, we're playing NBA 2K. And it's just, you know, you could really just interchange a lot of those concepts. But as someone who came from the more traditional entertainment and sports world into esports, there are a lot of similarities, and I've noticed them, but there are huge differences. And that's what these last few years working, you know, with players and teams and brands and companies in the space, you learn these intricacies and how it all works. And
that's what those better academic programs should be teaching. It's we're going to teach the basic concepts, but we're also going to teach some of these intricacies that are unique to esports. And you can't do that effectively unless you have been involved in esports and have been researching it and doing it yourself, you know?
Absolutely. So I know you're also, you know, an advisor for the college's esports program. So how does the whole recruitment process work? Do you actually recruit players or?
Yeah. So our program is only a few years old. It's a club level. It's not what you would call a varsity program. We're not offering scholarships. It's really housed within the recreation services club sports level at this point. And really, I don't know, even though they called it a sport at my school, maybe more of like an activity. I wouldn't say we're actively recruiting students. It's more about we recruit the students that are currently students to increase our number of students in the club. It's more of a endemic type of recruitment here at Slippery Rock. That's not to say that as we continue to evolve with our esports curriculum, and we're also looking at adding an esports arena at Slippery Rock, I think that will develop and evolve into more of a competitive scene at Slippery Rock. Shenandoah, I know a few weeks ago, had a recruitment event, which I think that is going to be more common these days. So they invited a number of high school level esports players as like a showcase type of event. And then they invited some collegiate coaches. And so it was almost, like a combine type of, well, I wouldn't say combine because they weren't actually, they were playing and then being observed while they were playing and being able to interact with some of these coaches and some of the high school esports players. And I think that's going to be starting to be more commonplace, especially as things open up where you can do more face-to-face activities. I think it's pretty hard to do that completely online, because the student wants the college experience where they, you know, a lot of them may want to be on campus. And so they want to do the visit, but also get to know what type of environment am I stepping into with the coaching and with their teammates.
Amazing. I mean, I think that's a really interesting concept. And I know that there's started to become the development of like recruiting agencies and firms that are kind of targeting players. But now you have these elite showcases. How does the players get selected? Is it just by achieving a certain level? Or
I think it was open to anyone. Yeah. And you know, obviously some of these coaches are looking at skill ranks and things. But, you know, I think that certainly the way that certain players play, and it's specific to the game and the game title and how well their play style and their communication style mesh with the rest of the teammates. I mean, that's all part of that recruitment process. It's hard to get from looking at a ranking from a player. And I think that some of those, what you might call soft skills, will start to play a greater importance as esports, especially at the collegiate level, starts to increase. And I'm looking forward to seeing how that develops.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the point you've kind of brought up with just how Slippery Rock has incorporated into their universities, it's, you know, more of an internal club where everyone that's already a student can find like-minded people that like playing League or Smash or Rock League or any of these and want to compete against schools the same way, you know, you might be part of the lacrosse club or any of these other student organizations.
Mm-hmm. And the one thing that we've done recently is as I said, we're only about 3 years old of an organization. This year, we started involving hosting tournaments for more than just our own current student body. And I know we participate in different leagues, but for hosting our own tournaments in the past, they'd only been Slippery Rock students. And so now we've opened it up to Pennsylvania State System of Higher Education. Anybody within that what's called the PASHI school network could participate in some of our online tournaments, which is pretty neat. So it increased our participation in some of the tournaments that we host. I know next week we're hosting a CSGO tournament.
Amazing. So it sounds like you guys are really, you know, doing some innovative things over there. So what's the future of the program at Slippery Rock?
Yeah, I think increasing the size of the club, but then I really think that if and when we get a esports arena approved and built, that will start to attract higher caliber students. I'd really like to see greater diversity in our club. And so that's something that is lacking a little bit. So I think that that's an area for growth. And then the academic curriculum, where, you know, I'm in the College of Health, Environment, and Science. Health, Engineering, and Science. We just changed the name. And the esports minor is going to be housed in the College of Business. And so it will be a true interdisciplinary program. And so I think that as students start to take these classes and to see some of the crossover and to hear from the experiences of different faculty from different backgrounds, that will start to increase the popularity of esports on campus and try to attract more students at Slippery Rock, which I'm looking forward to seeing the growth.
Awesome. So what do you think the future of college esports and, you know, the academic and research side of it? How big can this all get?
That's a good question. I think that it will be interesting to see what happens with some of these programs, the higher ed esports programs, because right now we're still at the level where we're not tracking, these people haven't graduated from these programs yet. If we're talking about a four-year program, and the majority of them started around 2018, 2019, 2020. And so if we're talking about the academic curriculum of esports, it will be interesting to see what's the job placement rate of these graduates. Are they working in the esports industry? What areas of esports are they working in? You know, what's their salary? And then what's the retention rate of these programs? How are they holding on to those students that they originally attracted? And then for me, a big interest that I'm wanting to see what happens is that how will collegiate esports potentially be regulated and streamlined, because it's really, there's so many different leagues that the different teams from different areas compete in across the different game titles. And, you know, there's always the discussion of whether the NCAA will try to get involved, and they would obviously have to have a major agreement with the game publishers. And you know, you being the legal guy probably know that better than me, but I'm really interested to see how the regulation and institutionalization of collegiate esports goes, because of the whole amateur status and these other types of rules that I think... The impression I get is the majority of esports hardcore people don't want the NCAA involved whatsoever. But to try to get mainstream acceptance of esports, it honestly wouldn't be a bad thing to get the NCAA involved. Same with the Olympics. You know, there's people, you know, people don't want to be involved in the Olympics because then you've got to bend and sway toward the IOC and what their demands are. But if you get greater acceptance from what people perceive as sort of the authority of sport, then that's going to increase the acceptance in general society of esports. So yeah, that's where I see some of the unique things that I'm really looking forward to seeing how it pans out.
Yeah. I mean, I think those are, you know, really interesting points that you brought up about how, do you want the NCAA in this big institution kind of governing every angle and transaction of it, or is it kind of better in this almost third party? A lot of it is almost like a club. It might be like a super active, intense club at the varsity level, but at the end of the day, it's not necessarily the level that a basketball program or a hockey or a football or, you know, even a lacrosse program might be at most universities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and other things. For at the collegiate level, I'm looking to more streamlined leagues. You know, I'm interested to see how VR esports may pick up, and also even mobile esports at the collegiate level, whether that may pick up. And I'd love to see specific tournaments focused on people with disabilities, and that doesn't have to be at the collegiate level, but just any level. Where playing alongside able-bodied people, but even just specific, because I've spoken to different people, some of them with visual impairments and whatnot, and they said they'd love to see some types of tournaments specifically for people with similar disabilities. Those are all things that I think that as the popularity and growth of esports takes off, so I'd love to see some of those opportunities for those people too.
Absolutely. I think there was a recent article or some news about people trying to advocate for more gaming tournaments, focus on that and trying to kind of give additional opportunities, which, you know, at the end of the day, I think that's one of these big, you know, overarching themes in esports and gaming space is, you know, equality and inclusion, whether it's gender, race, mm-hmm. you know, and anything else that kind of goes along that spectrum.
Yeah, one recent research study that was published probably about 3 or 4 months ago, it was looking at the percentage of males and females men and women within esports teams at the collegiate level. And one of the big distinguishing characteristics is there were significantly less women involved in the team when the team went to the varsity status and started offering scholarships. And so,
it's a lot more intense, you know, it's like the varsity level and the enthusiasm and the passion and the people that are playing it. It's another level than what you're doing on a Saturday night.
Yes. But it also can be that potentially the people that are selecting the players for the scholarships have a bias against women that they can play at the same level as men. You know,
well, we're not throwing any colleagues under the bus. It's important to be aware of these things that, you know, this implicit and, you know, subconscious bias. These are things that do come to fact.
Exactly. Yeah. So, Anyway, those are all things that more research is needed, and the Esports Research Network and the International Journal of Esports are great platforms to continue to investigate these types of issues and to try to get the word out for industry and players as well as other researchers.
Absolutely. So, I like to kind of end each episode with my three questions. So what's your favorite game to watch?
Probably CSGO, although I do like Rocket League quite a bit, actually.
What about your favorite game to play?
Rocket League.
Okay, awesome. So, thank you so much for joining us. This was extremely insightful. So tell everybody where they can find you.
You can find me on Twitter at Dr. Seth Jenny, and you can find me on LinkedIn under Seth Jenny, SethJenny.
Well, thanks everybody again for tuning in and, for joining us. This was some great knowledge. And make sure to follow him if you want to get that true insight in what's going on. And follow me on Twitter, JustinJESQ, and check Apple Podcasts for all of past episodes.